Welcome to Ask Christian Counseling Associates with your host, Dr. Rich Hoffman, founder and clinical director of Christian Counseling Associates, or CCA. We are the leading faith-based counseling organization. It is our hope that during your listening time, you will receive sound clinical advice, inspiration, and timeless wisdom to face daily challenges. And now, here is your host of Ask Christian Counseling Associates, Dr. Rich Hoffman.
Welcome, everybody, to Ask Christian Counseling Associates. I'm your host, Dr. Rich Hoffman, and special guest with me today, Michael Palladini. I've known Mike for years, as he is an addictions specialist. Mike is here to talk today about his book, Spellbound and Sensationalists. I had a chance to read your book, Mike. Very interesting, and just particularly found it very helpful to get into the mindset of somebody who is struggling with addiction. Welcome. It's great to have you here today. And why don't we start off with just telling the folks about your background. What got you into addictions work? What's your expertise?
Thank you, Rich. I appreciate your invitation to be here and talk about myself in the book. Really looking forward to this. So again, thank you. The book Spellbound and Sensationalist, if people ask the cover of the copy and the title and where'd that come from, and it really is a culmination of many things that I learned over maybe a 20-year period, and we've known each other for quite a while, in working in the addiction field as an educator, as a pharmacist, as someone who has a, undergrad degree in psychology as well. Always an interest in psychoactive medications. And then, as you are aware, in the late 90s, early 2000s, we started seeing a lot of substance use issues with pharmaceutical drugs, overuse that I saw working as a pharmacist. And then just a really strong prevalence of drug use for conditions that really weren't, the needs weren't being met of people. Pain, overuse of opioids, stimulant use for attention issues in children, benzodiazepine use in anxiety, overuse of antidepressants through the 90s when I was really cutting my teeth in the pharmacy world. So just this preponderance of substances that were being indiscriminately prescribed and then leading to a lot of illicit drug use. So I found a natural calling through work, as well as unfortunately knowing a lot of people personally that were suffering from substance use. So began to start looking at how can I help there. And as a pharmacist, there was a need that it was expressed by folks in the state programs that this education from the pharmaceutical side of things could be very valuable. So working as an educator for the state of Pennsylvania and their Department of Drug and Alcohol Programs, as well as various private organizations over time, really allowed me to develop my ability to share my knowledge and build a knowledge base that I came to define myself as. And then jumping ahead a little bit now, the book and all these folks that I came to know who were suffering both professionally over years, personally, working as a therapist as well to get to know people and try to help them. Spellbound and Sensationalist was a term that I had come across in the psychiatric world, where that is how an individual's life and experience was being described, as the drugs kind of led them to a spellbound type of nature where they were unable to recognize the grasp that these medications or drugs had on them, as well as not understand the costs of what their overall life was giving up because of their dependency on these drugs. And as time went by and they remained dependent on many medications, the sensationless part started to overtake their personality and made them, that's what we might call dependence or addiction, where their sensations to other aspects of life are really dulled and become absent for the most part. And that it's a term that really describes that single-minded focus that is driven by the drug use.
And I think the book, you know, really takes a very personal demonstration of how that would work out. You know, so just going back to, you know, how we know each other, at Christian Counseling Associates, you would come and visit, you know, and provide resources and connections for, you know, people that we were encountering who were in addiction. And, you know, plenty of people would come through the practice searching for help, parents, friends of addicts, addicts themselves. And like you're saying, there's a quality to that where it's like you're under a spell. You're sort of caught up, you're captivated. And then this, as you describe it, the sensationalist part, where your life just becomes this thing that you have to keep going back to all the time. Like, no matter what, all roads lead back to using drugs of some kind. And then very interesting, you know, about legal drugs, things that are prescribed. Psychiatrists, primary care physicians, pain management doctors, and you're talking about this reality of overprescription and the culture around that I don't think that everybody really sees, but that's been something that you've personally become acquainted with. And again, I think it's a very interesting part of the book how this is not about illegal drugs, you know, in a sense. I mean, there's that, but there's more prevalent legal drugs, you know, that are entering into people's lives.
Yeah, I'll add to that that when we're trying to help people, the systems that we have in place, an organization like yourself, various other treatment programs that kind of are molded now to deliver treatment based on some loosely held standards that we think help people, and the continued reliance on medications for this acute fix that we need to get people in a space, and then but we don't have the tools or the patience to work with them in a long continuum of recovery, which is slowly now being recognized that's what's necessary. But on the flip side of that, and reading the book, you will acknowledge, as well as what you do through your Christian Counseling Associates, there's always a background that needs to be rooted out and addressed. You know, we talk about root cause analysis on problems and finding right solutions, which are psychiatric and medical community and treatment community really don't do a good job at as uncovering. But, you know, a big storyline in Spellbound and Sensationalist is, you know, one of the characters need to address his upbringing, his trauma, his issues that have followed him through life and kind of formed how he experiences relationships and his own idea of himself that is unresolved for a long time, and that comes to really be the foundation of his drug use. And the ongoing treatment of medication overrides the real need to discover psychologically or what's really wrong here. And it comes at a point in the character's life where it's done incorrectly and almost too late to really resolve any of that, and he falls victim to the paradigm of medications and no real help. So it's really a nod to there's better ways to do this, and we really need to uncover what's inside people, and determine what the problem really is.
So there's this scene where Mark, the central character who's addicted, is going to this appointment with Dr. Kang, and really just sets up a deeper journey into his addiction. With that, mm-hmm. with professionals who are, for lack of a better term, collaborating with him. And so, that's something that we've been aware of, for many years. And at Christian Counseling Associates, we're not opposed to medication, but our approach is that we want to explore what it means to have the least amount of medication for the least amount of time possible. For the person to really make a recovery or progress. And as you're saying, medications are so overprescribed that a lot of times that threshold of least amount for least amount of time is zero. And we have a lot of folks out there who are really cautious about medication because they see the abuses and they see, people caught up. So I think it's a great, viewpoint that you have as a in your professional practice.
Christian Counseling Associates is ready to serve you, providing a wide range of counseling services. Christian counseling is accessible to everyone. We serve both Christians who want their faith integrated into the counseling process or those holding any beliefs or attitudes toward spirituality. With many years of counseling experience, our counselors are professional, licensed, highly trained, and rooted in their commitment to their church and communities. CCA is able to provide a full range of clinical counseling services. For more information, visit our website at www.ccawpa.com.
We have Michael Palladini here, author of Spellbound and Sensationalists, and you can go to Michael's website at michaelpalladini.com, and you'll see that up on the screen. And not only is Michael an author, and you'll find that on his website, he's an expert in addictions. He has a podcast that you can access there, and plenty of other resources. So if our audience is out there, just wondering where they can get more of the information we're talking about today, go to Michael's website, and you'll find it all there. Tell me, Michael, about this book. I haven't written a full publication, although I produce content. This took you a lot of time, So the personal connection that drives you to produce a work like this, tell me about that. What personal connection do you have with addiction and the characters that you wrote about?
Yeah, that's so true, Rich. The personal connection and deriving my own feelings and putting them on paper to help me describe the issues that I was experiencing professionally and personally is key to, in my opinion, writing something that is going to enrich people to read who have read it and really take something away from it. Some of the characters in the book are conglomerations of the multitudes of individuals that I've tried to help in therapy settings over years. There's a certain personality characteristic that might be apparent in many people, so I pull that. But there's also individual traits that are very interesting and might be helpful in helping someone get the recovery going. So I tried to illustrate that in a couple of the characters. The main character, and not to give too much away, as you mentioned, his name Mark, was based on someone that I had known personally, who struggled, and I've known as a good friend for a long time. So you wonder where do people get material for writing books that are highly emotionally charged, a lot of insight, and where does this material come from? Well, a lot of it was drawn from personal experiences that I'd had with certain individuals that live on in my memory, that I was able to recreate as part of a story that I felt needed told. My professional experiences in the treatment world allowed me to see the frustration, the barriers that come up constantly for people whose intentions may be very strong and very well guided from the beginning, but the system, for a better way of putting it, that they get kind of thrown into to navigate, be it legal, be it insurance driven, be it social, a lot of socioeconomic relationship type issues that are hard to get over, or these hurdles that are always being thrown up in front of people to make that progress. And they may be built in for one reason. I mean, we have a lot of laws that criminalize things that make issues for people. We have a lot of processes that need to be navigated that a lot of people don't have patience for. We have a lot, we have a distinct lack of spiritual depth within individuals that gets that minuscule amount of spirituality in our current society gets hijacked by the false persona that the drugs provide. And in the book, I was trying to make that apparent, where, you know, the drugs and their effects are almost deified by people. It becomes the overriding quality in their life. And it's very falsely supported. When they go away, that people are left staring into a void, as we say, you know. So here we are, defunct spiritually, hurting socially, a lot of legal struggles, perhaps, for certain individuals. A lot of what makes community as a major support system kind of not apparent or not in place for a lot of people. So all these struggles led me to kind of a personal frustration where I see problems with how we're helping people. I need to express this. So a novel, a story was my idea to do it, where I can inject a lot of personal thought and insight, as opposed to the book I'd written earlier, which was more of a reference book, which is a little more scientifically based. I wanted to tell a story, and I had a lot of personal friends that supplied me with their stories that I could then utilize. And it all kind of came together with, this is the mindset of what someone's going through. And I felt that was important for people to be able to see and experience and really recognize, boy, that these, some people struggle and we're really not doing the best job we can to help them through these struggles that are partially created by the world they're living in. And then our solutions don't help as much either. So we're putting people in very difficult situations. And by telling a story like this, I felt that it would personalize it. So someone who took the time to read it and get to know these characters can really feel that they're representative of many people that are put in these positions via their causes. Why are they in this position? And then why is it so difficult for them to resolve it and move on in what we would call a socially acceptable manner? So all of that being put together.
Some of those dynamics, you know, and I, you know, that's what it accomplished for me, you know, getting to know these characters and spending time with them in the book, just grappling with some of the scenarios that I think people would commonly do. So there was this character, she's in, they're all in group therapy together, and, mm-hmm. and there's this girl, one day she's there, and the next day she's overdosed and she's gone. And then another girl comes along, I think her name's Alicia, looks just like the last girl, and now she's a part of the group, and just the whole thing just moves on from that person. And right. I can't imagine, you know, the frustration, you know, for, you know, people who cared about this person who's now gone. The people who are trying to help, they just see this happening repeatedly, and the community, just a lot of people. I think it was 100,000 people last year that was the statistic, people overdosed and died from fentanyl. Let's talk about that. I mean, what do you see happening out in the community, to deal with this, that would be important to know about?
You mean the rise of, synthetic drugs like fentanyl that are very deadly, is really concerning, and that's what's fueling, as you mentioned, these overdose deaths. It's really a very big picture of where's this coming from other countries, and making its way into every neighborhood or area in our entire country, that this fentanyl, which is deadly, is making up the illicit opioid market. It's making its way into other types of drugs, stimulants, cocaine use. It's really a type of substance that's becoming infiltrating every aspect of illicit substance use. That's one side of it. The other side, where I work on a daily basis, is how well of a job are we doing in minimizing the use of prescription drugs and acclimating people or introducing them to the narcotic / stimulant / anti-anxiety or depressant drug world. And we're getting a little better, but we still have a very heavy reliance on these medications to treat people. And we want to make people feel better right away without effort on their part. So take this medicine and let's see how that goes. And, I'm not against medicines per se, but I think we use them to stabilize people, but then we don't do a very good job of following through and recognizing where we need to move people away from drugs. I mean, I work with folks that are from other parts of the world, and they'll tell you that the reliance on these strong narcotic-based medications, it doesn't happen in other parts of the world. And if you've got some discomfort, there are other ways to cope with it and move on from it. And there's a lot of personal integrity that's built into the individual in those areas, where it's expected of them to be able to cope with this. And we see that quite differently. We do all we can to make people comfortable by all means. Let's not suffer. So what I'm seeing out there now is this continued reliance on medications, which then introduces individuals to the abilities of what drugs can do. Younger age, the over 21 to 25 demographic, where we see the highest use, people become accustomed to the idea that drugs can do something for them that nothing else can do. So we're still seeing that. We're seeing a lot of opioid use that's fentanyl-based that continues to be highly prevalent in many areas of the state and the country, and that is what's driving overdoses. And recent pandemic dynamics has led to more isolation from people, more suffering overall in various aspects of life, where alcohol drug use has risen again because of all the dynamics that affects people's lives. So I think that had a role in bumping that number up, of course. So we'll see how things move from now on. But, we're seeing stimulant methamphetamine use in our state here in Pennsylvania increasing, as it is across the country, because, again, a synthetic drug such as fentanyl is easily produced in mass quantities and then easily transported. And people are then acclimated to it and become tolerant and dependent on it very quickly. So the synthetic nature, and a lot of people have written about this, the synthetic nature of drugs and their portability and their strength has made this problem, much more deadly than it has been.
Well, it's interesting to me that they say, like, with fentanyl, like, just like a couple of granules can kill you. But then, you know, if you watch some of the addiction, documentaries, they'll get a hold of people who are just using unbelievable amounts and build up a tolerance to something that, you know, if you accidentally took it and you didn't have a tolerance, would kill you in a second. They're using it all day in really heavy amounts. It's just amazing, some of those dynamics. But one, you know, that I would just, mention to the folks here, you know, is that, you know, in your book, you also, there was a phrase that one of the therapists would say, everything must change. If you're going to get away from this once you're in it, a lot of aspects of your life become organized around the addiction. Mm-hmm. And that's part of what we provide. So at Christian Counseling Associates, we have outpatient counseling and we have intensive outpatient counseling, both for adults and adolescents. So people can come to us who are been arrested and they have a requirement from the court. But families, just start to recognize this first, and people out in the Christian community, pastors will come along, people that they know are addicted, and we can start the process of getting somebody in and putting people around them. So, it's not the choice of everybody, who comes to Christian counseling that they want to get in touch with the Christian community. But what we have is that if they're open to that, as part of the recovery, they can meet a whole new group of people who would come around them, be in places in the community that they never have been in before but are highly welcoming, where they would have something to do every night of the week. We can set them up with resources and meetings, as well as professional counseling, and a plan that can start moving them away from these patterns. And we're in connection with people like you. So, whatever is needed, so if there's a medication, for people who are opioid addicted, something that we have to introduce, we have all of the connections that all the other places do too. But that's something, special, that if everything is going to change in our life, that's going to mean groups of people.
Everything must change. And I'm glad you brought that up, because that is something that one character would come to mind when certain issues might trigger him one way or another, he would be reminded of that. And if everything is going to change, then it needs to have an anchor to grow from. So an organization like yours that's providing that base for here, you can come, feel safe and start talking and get away from and identify and begin to get away from all these things. Some individuals don't know what they need to change. They need to start identifying it. They mislabel a feeling with what it's truly telling them, and they rationalize a lot of things. So to live up to that statement, everything must change, which in my story came from a therapist, and one character kept remembering that when he was tempted or things were starting to change in his mind about what his recovery meant, or some of the frustrations were coming up against him and what to do. Yes, that is I included that several times because it's the reminder that you're working towards something, but there are so many aspects of your life that are going to fall under the dominion of that dopamine driven drug memory circuit, that you've got to slowly change everything and begin to build new memories, new connections, new support systems, everything that will redefine you, because the influence of the drug is much greater than most people entering recovery acknowledge or are willing to acknowledge until they can get better.
Hello, I'm David Collins with Christian Counseling Associates, in particular the Foundation for Christian Counseling. I'm also a licensed professional counselor. Just talk to you a minute about what the foundation does and what we can provide. We strengthen the local communities, the families. We create this foundation. We do that through supporting marriages and marriage tune-up. We do that through supporting individuals in parenting and Christian active parenting. We also are community support, and obviously each of those people are located in the community, and so we seek to connect those folks with our partner churches. We really engage with helping people in those times, in those floods of their life where they're in crisis, and that crisis we help to point them, we help to shine a light towards the foundation, the rock that is Christ. We really seek and aim to meet those people in crisis, to let them know that we care, that there's a way forward, that we can keep things accessible as far as support and help through the particular foundation grants that we offer. And that is just a bit about the vision and the mission that Foundation for Christian Counseling is after. Your giving transforms communities one family at a time.
We have Michael Palladini here with us, addictions expert, author of Spellbound and Sensationalist. And, you know, Michael, you've been talking to many, many groups everywhere, you know. And so, you know, for our folks who are listening to us today, just saying, there's somebody with addictions in my life. I care about them. I have a sense of urgency. I don't know exactly what to do. What would be the key things that you would want them to know in getting this person the opportunity for some help?
Well, one would be to listen to them and not tell them what you think they need to do. There's an extreme sense of defensiveness, which comes from what our society imposes on people who are dependent on drugs. They already begin to feel that they're outside of society norms because they've become accustomed to drugs. So we need to acknowledge that and recognize that they're kind of living in a separate reality almost. So we need to listen to them and ask the right kind of questions. You know, a lot of the therapeutic approaches are empowering of the patient or client, however you want, or the individual. So let's get them to realize that, you know, we understand what they may be going through, but maybe not enough. Please tell me, you know, what do you need? What do you feel like you'd like to do? I'm here to talk to you if anything's making you uncomfortable. But if it's a more acute situation and it's, you know, it's dangerous to go on, you know, there's ways to get someone to talk to a professional that they may be willing to listen to, such as, you know, someone like yourself or who you have in your agency. Make that call. Go to a meeting. Find support. Start to recognize that it's not a them versus me type of world. There's a lot of people out there that have experienced what you are doing. And there's a lot of people there willing to help you. I mean, there are recovery specialists that are a new breed of folks that are there to talk, that are even in hospitals and in associated with emergency departments. There's more recognition now that there are people that will listen to you. So giving an individual that credibility, that warmth, that recognition that they're a human being and they've got some things to say that are bothering them. As a family member, you may be truly extremely upset inside as to what you see is happening to your loved one, but that they're still that same person you recall, and you've got to be able to talk to them in that manner. Don't treat them as the drug. Treat them as a person who's having a problem with this drug, and we want to get back to that person. And, you know, the drugs aren't 100% inebriating constantly. There's going to be time when they'll be able to hear you and would appreciate it. And that's asking a lot of family members and loved ones to have this patient process. But in the end, I think it works best as opposed to a panic and shipping someone off somewhere to away from home to some inpatient facility. I mean, I've worked for enough of those programs. I know that they're, you know, their success rate's low. And we need to keep someone involved in the community and start to recognize, where is all my support coming from? This family member, this relative, this friend, this person who's maybe part of a spiritual organization I was involved with once, so forth and so forth. So, you know, make them feel useful, give them some type of work to do, some other types of reward. And eventually, you know, there has to come a time where the use of the substance is minimized, or it's not solely sought on a day-to-day basis. But so if I had the right answer, Rich, I mean, I'd write another book.
Well, maybe another book's forthcoming here. But definitely, when I was first coming up and dealing with addiction, you know, they always talked about the tough love approach. And what you're describing, and maybe there's a time for that, you know, but that we have to really be sensitive to the unexpressed need and stay in relationship with the person. Bring family and caregivers around the person. Keep them connected.
Right.
I hope people are hearing that out there, that they have a role to play. And would want people to know too that they could call us, 724-396-1510 for all of our four state area that we're in, but especially, we're from Pennsylvania. You know, anybody who's listening to this could call and reach out, and we would be glad to help in that process, and bring people together and start that intervention, and keep people connected. It's important to get help if you know somebody is struggling with addiction, and get them to treatment. But it's going to involve family members and friends and the community.
Yeah, a good point, because you know, some people aren't aware of all the resources that might be out there. So a call to an organization like yours would help someone understand what they can do as a family member and not feel so overwhelmed by this situation that's become perhaps so foreign to them, where what's happened to my loved one, my spouse, my child, what has happened to this person? It's very overwhelming. So the family member needs to seek that help, find the resources available, find how they can best promote recovery for this person and get them along a different path and approach it in the right manner. So, you know, it's a complex issue. I mean, it doesn't start by one simple aspect of someone's existence. There's many things that form within a person that leads them to start to use drugs and start to rely on them. And we get to that point, there's a lot that needs untangled to determine, you know, what started all this? What does this person need? Organizations like yours, that's what you do. So you help the family and the patient find a comfortable place to start thinking about these things and doing it. And, you know, back to my book, that was desperately needed for one of the characters, but it was approached differently. And I wanted to really illustrate how this happens a lot, where the reliance on medication compromises the reliance on all the things that I just mentioned. And, you know, what the true person needs is not addressed, and it becomes too late sometimes. So the more human connection and interaction that can be built in as soon as possible, I think promotes the best success in helping someone and saving them.
And so, like the characters in the book and the people that we've seen for years, there are underlying things that need to be dealt with. You know, places where people are in emotional pain, trauma, loss that now is being artificially filled by a drug. And until we really start to dig deep down, you know, it's going to be very tough, you know, for somebody to get traction, you know, to move away and change things in their life, you know, that's part of why we're friends, you know, is that I know that if somebody mm-hmm. goes to you and, you know, for help, that you are going to look past just the immediate things and dig deep into that person's life. That's what people can expect at CCA to get. It's good to know, Michael, that you're out there, really available to people. And once again, your website, michaelpaladini.com, you can go and get this book, find out more. And also, just for whatever help people are looking for, they can come your direction.
Yeah, and the website, we have built in a way to correspond with me as well, because, as you're mentioning, this is a personal type of topic. Someone might read my book and have something to share with me, or a question, or even just want to talk about certain aspects of this whole topic. So we have a way in there to directly communicate, which I think is very important. You read the book, that's great. You listen to one of the podcasts, fantastic. But moving on, I'm a person that's interested in helping others. So we want to be able to build in a way to correspond and direct people in the right way. And for the long term, that's where the value will come from. Get more people to read some stuff, more people to interact and share the resources that I feel are worthy, and help as many people as we can.
That's awesome. I want to thank you for being here with me today. And, for the folks who are listening to us, know that help is available. Know that, people like Michael, we have great connections with, and that if you pick up the phone and give us a call, email us, or visit, Michael's website, you're going to find the help that you need. And that is what our hope is for you today. And, for anybody out there who's feeling desperate today, or in an impossible situation, or has lost somebody, we ask for God's special blessing on you today, and protection as you go through this challenge in your life. We hope that we'll have a chance to walk alongside of you. Michael, thanks for being with us today. It was really great to have you.
My pleasure. Thank you, Rich. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Ask Christian Counseling Associates. We hope that you have been blessed by today's presentation. Please visit the Christian Counseling Associates website, where you can comment on today's podcast, sign up for the weekly article, connect with our social media, or even schedule an appointment at one of our nearby locations. We also provide online counseling for those not in our immediate area. Thanks again for listening. May God bless you and keep you well along life's journey.